Well, hello, good evening, and welcome. When I sat down, there weren't very many people in the room, and it's great to see so many of you here, especially on such a warm summer's evening. My name is Beverly, and it's my task this evening to introduce our speaker and this evening, and to welcome you all. Really good to see you, and to also keep the program very much to time. Can you hear me at the back there? I can feel it's sort of just been turned up. Great, fantastic. And we always ask how many people are coming here for the first time because, and oh, a few hands have gone up straight away. Excellent, that's always good to know. Yes, anyone else? And quite a few of you. A very especially warm welcome to you. It's always nice to have familiar faces and new faces too. I hope, in fact, I know you're going to enjoy this evening. I'm certainly looking forward to it. I had the pleasure early on to be introduced to two people in the audience who are here all the way from Australia. Is anybody here from any further away than Australia? Now, I know this is a popular place to come for Thursday evening talk, but that really is probably one of the furthest that we've had people travel. A very warm welcome to you, and thank you for joining us this evening. There are a couple of housekeeping things that I have to say, so it's always good to get those out of the way. I know I switched mine off, and some of you may need to have your phones on silent. Please do so. Take the opportunity to do that now. And in the very, very, very unlikely event that the alarm goes off, right? Meals are prepared in this house and anything could happen. The alarm goes off. I suggest that you follow the ushers. And they're very clearly identified in purple, with a purple sash, and we'll find the quickest exit out. And so that's what I suggest we do in the very unlikely event that the fire alarm goes off. Now, we do have a very special speaker this evening, and you may well be tempted to take photographs, but we would ask you to refrain from doing so this evening. Thank you. Now, for those of you who are coming here for the very first time and have maybe come with a trusted friend and are wondering what goes on in a place like this, well, so many things. Talks like this evening, for example. Workshops, events of a range of events that happen. And it's all about spiritual development and personal development. I've been coming here for many years and I'd like to think that I've developed in some way in that time. And anybody who's interested in any of the activities that happen worldwide with the Brahma Kumaris, then there are leaflets on the table outside. Now, I don't want to take up too much more time from this evening's talk because there is a lot to say. God's DNA. For those who are coming to the Thursday evening talk and didn't know that's what it was entitled, that's what it'll be. It's about finding out what is God all about? Would we recognize the qualities that he has? Do we recognize them in ourselves? How many of us see ourselves as God sees us? Well, there isn't a better speaker, I don't think, to be able to talk and explore these topics than Sister Jenty, who I'm going to introduce now. Sister Jenty, to me, I think, is the epitome of God's closest friend. There isn't anyone, I think, better qualified in the room to be able to talk about what it is that God looks like, how God is, and how we might associate ourselves and recognize how we are as God sees us. And so, with a very busy schedule, I was only looking at it this morning. Sister Jenty was in Portugal last week. Over the weekend, she's going to be in Scotland, then she's off to Brussels, and then off to Abu Dhabi. So it's great that she's been able to squeeze us in this evening. And I think you've probably got more air miles than the average EasyJet pilot, actually, because there's a fair few miles that are clocked up with travelling. But as European Director of the Brahma Kumaris, a very experienced speaker, over 40 years experience of meditating and spiritual development. So we really are in for a treat this evening. Please take notes. There will be lots, I'm sure, that you'll want to record. And you may want to ask some questions, and we do welcome you doing that. may have comments as well, or challenge what's being said, please hold on to those. There will be an opportunity for you to say your bit when Sister Jenty has finished her talk. So with no more from me and a really warm welcome to Sister Jenty, I'd like to invite you to the stage. Shall we just yet invite her up?
Om Shanti. A greeting of peace to my sisters and my brothers. Good evening. Thanks, Beverly, for that very, very warm introduction. I'm not a scientist, so there's not a lot that I know about DNA in terms of science. But enough just to say that when you mention somebody's DNA, what you're talking about is the way they are, who they are, their very being, their personality. They say that DNA is the engine of life. And yes, there are situations in which DNA is expressed, and there are situations in which DNA can be suppressed. And so different times, different situations and environment. So what has all this got to do with God? It seemed a lovely idea, and I don't know whose idea it was originally, but it does seem a good idea to think about the whole subject of science as an exploration, but also the subject of God as an exploration. And when you explore something, you begin with a certain concept, and you experiment and you see, does this work, or is there something else that's happening that makes you change your concept? And if the results of your research and experimentation show something different, then you have to say, well, that is the reality. And so in terms of God, there have been lots of myths, lots of legends, many different concepts, all sorts of ideas that have come up. But how do we know whether all this is real or not? I'll give you an example. We talk about God as the ocean of love. Maybe two concepts of God that are known across the world universally are that God is love, and it seems to be a bit of a paradox, but also that God is truth. And somehow these two concepts of love and truth have been the defining qualities that we've always spoken of in terms of God. And so have I experienced God's love? Maybe what I have done is, if I haven't yet come to that experience myself, maybe I've read somebody else's experience of God. Or maybe I've had the good fortune of meeting somebody who's able to share their personal experience of God. And so I begin to feel that, well, maybe there's something here that I need to explore further. And so I ask myself, well, how can I know what is God's love? And this is where we seem to have got stuck. Because so often different people have shown us different methods, and it's been challenging. And we not always come to that experience. And for me, what is very beautiful is that Raj Yoga, the method of meditation that we practice here, gave some very, very simple concepts and said, try these and see how you get on. And within my first few meditation sessions, I was very lucky. I was able to have very powerful experiences. And so it's on the basis of the knowledge that is being shared through this person whose photograph you see here, who we call Brahma Baba, the founder of the Brahma Kumaris. So so the knowledge that has been shared through him, and my own experiment with those concepts and ideas. And so what I share tonight will be on the basis of these two things. And yes, my good fortune also has been to have been with very, very powerful yogis. Can you imagine somebody who's meditated 80 years? 80 years of meditation and still is alive and is still sharing her experiences and understanding and wisdom with us. Well, some of you know Dadi Janki. So she's now 100, and every evening she's still sharing her wisdom through classes. So I don't know many who are able to come to that, but and Dadi Janki was in London for about 40 years. So I've known her for longer than that. I think maybe 60 years. That's right, I've known her for about 60 years. That's almost all my life. But she's been meditating for 80 years. And that's just one of the yogis who I've been associated with. So it's been an amazing journey. And I hope tonight maybe a door will open that you'll want to walk through and explore and experience for yourself and see where it takes you. So, first of all, the way to come to even begin to understand the concept of God is firstly to understand the self, in the sense that when I give my introduction, I'll talk about all the things associated with the body. Where was this born? Where do I live? Gender, age, nationality, religion, everything. But all of that is connected with the physical. And while I'm locked into my physical identity, it's not possible for me to know God. This is why we have so many conflicting ideas and conflicting images of the divine. And it's only when I transcend this identity and come to the awareness of my inner identity, my spiritual identity as a spiritual being, a being of light, a soul, that I can then begin to understand who God is. And what is God's DNA? And so, as you hear these ideas, see if you can just practice this awareness of just being here and letting yourself connect deeply with yourself and that awareness of the inner being of who you truly are. Try it and see how it goes. God doesn't have a physical form. Any physical form would be very, very limiting and restricted. And definitely, God is the one who is beyond all limits. And very interesting, because when we say beyond limits, we usually tend to think about the vastness. But there's another dimension to beyond limits. And that is, rather than infinity, the infinitesimal. One of the concepts that we've often talked about is God as the source of love, of truth, of wisdom, all the positive attributes you can think about. And so, the being that is God is actually absolutely no length, no width, no breadth, no height, just a being of light. And as you connect with that being of light, although the form is infinitesimal, the experiences of God's love, which is infinite, no limits, no boundaries, no conditions, no judgment. And the way to be able to experience this is coming here to the awareness of the inner being, the soul, and thinking of God as this being of light. Within that being of light, God's DNA, definitely love and truth. Absolute love for every human soul, but I would even go further, not just love for human souls, love for the whole of creation. Think about all the different species and how vast and wonderful this amazing planet is and the universe is and the whole of creation, and God's love and appreciation of absolutely every part of the creation. Quite amazing if you just spent a moment reflecting on it. But also very personally, sometimes we feel that we're not worthy of God's love. And we know the mistakes we've made, we know the challenges we've had, we know the weaknesses we carry within. We think it's in our DNA, but I want to challenge that a bit later. But we feel that it's not possible for us to receive God's love, or that we have to prove something in order to be able to receive God's love. Not true. God loves me as I am. And yes, God sees me with a very, very elevated vision. God wants me to make that elevated vision a reality. But He doesn't hold back His love until I get there. God's love is available here and now, at this very moment, as I am, who I am, weaknesses and defects and the goodness and everything else that makes up me as I am today. And so, unlimited love. Unlimited means everyone, but it also means that it's love that's never ever going to run out. Think about human love and the huge contrast. You expect a lot of love from people who are close to you, but sometimes you get it and sometimes you don't. And sometimes, yes, you get it for a period, but at some point of time, something changes and it runs dry. So, we've had that experience also. So, it's difficult for us to comprehend how it's possible for God to keep loving. I make mistakes, I fall and I get up again, and yet still, it's God's love that's helping me even get up again. And so the fact that I've made a mistake, God says, okay, never mind. So without judgment, without conditions, without any limit, absolutely just available for each and everyone. So it means that I don't have to share God's love. It's not a piece of cake. And if I take a slice, it reduces to any extent your slice. It's huge. Each of us can take as much as we can absorb, as much as we choose to absorb within ourselves, and it'll still not run out. Plenty more for absolutely everyone. Judgment, parents, and I suppose in a way that's the closest relationship. Parent and child, creator, creation. Human parents, and there'll definitely be conditions, there'll definitely be judgment. Think about all the time when you as a child were told, if you don't do this, so the threats, the promises, all of those things are part of life in the human world. But God's love beyond all of these limits. And the truth. Human beings begin to get a glimpse of truth, if they really seek the truth. And it's very difficult for them to know what is true and what isn't true, even to begin with. Because everybody will say, this is what is right, this is what is right. And many claims will be made. But to actually be able to discern the truth needs an understanding that it's very pure, very clean. The word intellect in English is the closest that I can come to translate a Hindi word, buddhi. The word buddhi is the capacity to understand, it's the capacity to discern, it's the container in which I can hold knowledge and wisdom. And so you can see that it's a lot bigger than just this word intellect. But intellect conveys some part of this. But I need to have that container within my own inner being, which is so clean, so pure, unpolluted, in which as I hear knowledge, I'm able to feel the value and the benefit, and as I begin to practice it in my life and see wisdom being part of my life, I come closer and closer to the truth, and I begin to get a glimpse of it. And it's a journey. Experiencing God's love can be instant. Experiencing God's truth can also be instant, in the sense that there's an amazing insight that I'd never had before that's now opened up for me, and I understand. But really, to know God as truth and the truth that is contained within that being, and to be able to understand and absorb and follow it in my life, that's a journey that involves a lot of purification of self. Not hard journey, don't let me put you off, but it is a journey. You understand gradually, and it's not linear time. For some, the understanding can still be very quickly, and for some, it takes a while. And so maybe it just depends on what I put as my priority. If I feel that this is a priority for me and I give it that attention, it can happen very fast. But yes, the one who absolutely knows what is going on. And again, you look at the complex situation of the world and how each one will share with you a different version of what's going on from their own particular perspective, which is natural, as human beings will. But only one being in the universe who sees everything and knows the story from the beginning through the middle to the end, and is able to reveal those secrets of truth. Truth isn't always as we would like it to be. Am I right? Do you agree? Sometimes it's inconvenient. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. Sometimes it's surprising. And so as we begin to hear God sharing the truth, some of it is very uncomfortable. Why? Because God tells us that it's a time for transition. And it shouldn't be uncomfortable, but it does become uncomfortable because we're so attached to everything here that we have, both around us and connected with us, and this identity of the physical form. So even though we might not like everything about this body or the people we are with or the circumstances and the environment we find ourselves, it's a comfort nest and we don't want to leave it. And yet what God is telling us is that it's time for change, it's time for transition. And I have to let go of my attachments to all of these things. This and this, everything. And so it's very uncomfortable, it's very inconvenient, and I don't like it. But it's the truth. And if I understand, then I'll say, I appreciate that I know, so that then I can prepare myself for the next step in human evolution within the journey of life, so that I'm ready for whatever the next step may be. But the truth in which God understands completely and God is able to share with us. Many, many qualities of God, as you can imagine. All the positive attributes that you can think of, they're there within that being. But one particular quality that I want to talk about, which in a way encompasses many, many other aspects, and so is essentially the DNA of God, and that is God the benefactor. And we sometimes use the word benefactor in a very simple way. Somebody has given a donation to a hospital, a school, or something, something, and so we say, you know, so-and-so is the benefactor. Not even philanthropist, we just say he's been the benefactor. But the one who's able to bring benefit to all, that would be the definition I would give of benefactor. The one who gives benefit. Again, I think about human beings. To what extent am I giving benefit to others? And yes, maybe I'm giving benefit to my children. Maybe the work that I do, and there's lots of caring professions, whether it's in education or whether it's in health or social work, to mention a few. Maybe it's being somebody who looks after the fire engines. Can be many different things. But yes, maybe my work involves giving benefit to others. But am I able to give benefit in a way that's able to take away all pain and all suffering forever and ever and ever? And it's beyond human capacity to do that for the self, never mind anyone else. But God, the benefactor, yes, the one who actually has the understanding and the power and the capacity and the role. It's very much connected with God's role. But the one who has all of these ingredients to be able to transform the human spirit and transform the quality of human life and even transform the world, so that God's existence is purely, purely to be able to give benefit to others. Nothing that God needs for her, his own existence, but the existence is simply to be able to give benefit to others. Connected with this word, benefactor, is another word, altruistic. And yes, human beings will say, if I do something good, I feel good. And if I do something that's not so good, I didn't feel so good. And so it's an incentive. The feelings that we have are an incentive to do good. If I'm doing good, benefit for someone, I feel good about it. And even if I'm doing good, but I'm actually, in theory, I'm saying it's to help another, but I'm not. The law of action, reaction, cause, effect, karma, is that whatever I do, finally, ultimately, it's either adding to my credit or it's subtracting from my credit. And so credit and debit both are connected with absolutely everything that we do. And we might not be aware of it, but that's the reality within the universe. But God, God's existence, simply for the benefit of all others. And so how does God do that? God doesn't come and give me a Panadol tablet to take away my headache, or even intervene when there's a major accident. That's not God's job. Human karma dictates so much of whatever it is that's going on. Partly it's human karma that's going on, partly it's the law of nature that's functioning. And if we let nature alone, nature has looked after us with such care and abundance for millennia. But of course, human beings are now so clever that they want to manipulate nature. And this is what we've been doing now for some decades. And so we're finding the results are not as we expected. But nature does its own work in terms of creation, sustenance and transformation. So the seeds fall on the fertile ground. It's not God who has to look after them. Nature will do its own work, and if human beings step away, nature will do a beautiful job. Human beings. And again, birth, life, death, it's our conscious choice. How and what and where and why. Again, no intervention by God in all of that. God's intervention comes and the role of benefactor gets played out at a time of absolute need, such as now. At a time when no one else can do anything about either the human spirit or the state of the world. You know how I was sharing, DNA is there, but at times it is latent, it's suppressed. And then at times conditions are such that it expresses itself. Through most of human history, God is the observer and lets the drama of life continue. And then at a time when human beings have created such chaos that human beings no longer have the understanding of what's going on, and definitely not the capacity of sorting it out and putting it right, that is when God intervenes. And what we're seeing now in the human world is a very interesting situation of transformation that's now possible. A 100 years ago, people weren't so aware of spirituality. People were quite caught up within their own particular traditions. There now seems to be this growing awareness of spirituality. Even 40 years ago, you wouldn't have heard about self-development courses, personal development things. Well, that's part of the picture now. So this interest that's awakening, or studies in consciousness. Again, at the turn of the century, it wouldn't have been some the century before, not the 21st, but the one before. People wouldn't have been exploring consciousness, and it was anyway so subtle, and they didn't have the tools with which to be able to do it. But now, the exploration of consciousness from so many different directions, so it is a special time in human history. And the role of God as benefactor is expressing itself now through the awakening of consciousness in such a big way all over the world, everywhere. And within that, knowledge plays a big, big role. If you tell somebody what to do, maybe they'll listen, maybe they won't. But if you explain somebody, now this and this and this is how it works, this and this will be the result if you do this and this, and you take the time and the trouble to take into consideration the fact that humans understand one moment and forget the next. I don't know whether as a child you had that experience that you were taught a lesson and then you'd forget and then you'd have to be retaught again. Well, never mind as a child, even as an even as adults. But definitely, God's patience is as infinite as his love. And so God takes on the role of teacher to explain, to remind, and remind, and remind, and remind again and again. So that at some point we're ready to switch and turn around from physical limited consciousness into the consciousness of the unlimited and the spiritual. And so firstly, God's role as benefactor is to share knowledge that we had at some point within our history, but we forgot. And so the reminder, and the reminder, and the reminder again and again. But sometimes you understand, and you even remember, but you're not actually able to do it. You don't have the inner power. Sometimes we would use the word willpower. We understand what we should do, but we don't have the willpower to be able to do it. Maybe in terms of changing habits and so on. God is also known as the Almighty Authority. And so God provides the power. He doesn't just provide the knowledge, but he provides the power with which to be able to make the changes that we need to make within ourselves. And so, you've got the knowledge, you've got the power, you also need the love to help you along the way. The power of love sometimes gives a deeper realization than any explanation or understanding. And so the love is also there, but the whole purpose of God's existence is to allow us to come back to that state in which we had absolute purity and we were able to be a true reflection of the Creator. There's a statement that comes in the scriptures, and it comes in all the scriptures, I think, that we've been created in the image of God. A very beautiful statement. And we've read it, we've heard it, but I'm not sure that we actually believed it. Why? Because when we looked at human beings and we looked at ourselves, it was such a different story. When we believed in God and we thought of God as love and truth, the benefactor, the ocean of forgiveness, the ocean of compassion, all of these wonderful titles, and we looked at ourselves and we saw that there was a big, big gap between the Creator and the creation. But in fact, in human terms, the continuity of life is through DNA. And so from generation to generation to generation, what is it that links us together? It is the DNA. And so God the Creator, and if I accept that, then surely the creation carries the same DNA. It's the continuity of the same. And so at the moment it feels as if you're very, very distant as the sky and the earth. But the beautiful story of today, and it's very much a story of today in the sense that this is that time when in this period of transition we can make that switch and come back to that original state in which truly we can once again be a reflection of the divine. And we couldn't do it on our own, but it's God's DNA as a benefactor that makes it possible for us. God wants us to become as He is. In human life, a parent will say, if I have a good life, I would want my child to have not just an equally good life, I would want my child to have an even better life than I have had. And the Supreme Parent definitely wants us to have a life which is a beautiful life, a good life, the most elevated life of all. And so God offers us that opportunity. If I choose to avail myself of it, I can take that knowledge, that love, that power, and all the assistance that God provides for me to make that transformation work for me. And the foundation of transformation is coming back here. The switch of awareness from the physical identity to the being that I am, the spiritual being. And once I make that switch with, and what does that mean? It's not hard work. It's not having to lift heavy books or carry a spade. It's just a little switch. How long does it take to press the button? So that's what it is. Just to press the button, and that's what it is. That I am a child of the divine. When I say those words in the consciousness of the physical identity, I feel nothing. But when I remind myself I'm a spirit, soul, and then I say, I, the soul, am a creation of the Creator, I'm a child of the divine, now it begins to feel and it begins to work in a very beautiful way. The transformation processes at work, and the power of love is able to heal the soul. God's DNA as benefactor is also to heal the pain and suffering that we've had for a long, long time. I believe in rebirth, and you may or may not, and it's a question that can be explored another time. But whether it's birth and the days of infancy and some of the trauma we may have experienced through that, or whether it's this understanding of the continuity of the soul and through many births and lives, and the trauma that we've carried with ourselves through many lives, there's a lot of suffering that each soul carries at the present time. Externally, you might have position, you might have property, you might have even good relationships with people around you. And yet somewhere, somehow along the line, the soul isn't able to be completely at ease and completely happy. There will always be some factor that causes tension, or pressure in some way or another. And so the benefactor heals the soul with the power of love. And as the process of healing begins to happen, I begin to realize what it is I need to do to have purification, and purification of my thoughts, purification of the way in which my conscience is working. Conscience had become dysfunctional because I wasn't understanding right and wrong, and so I ignored the soft voice of conscience again and again, and it stopped speaking. And so it became dysfunctional and I got trapped more and more. And the benefactor, and gently with love, touching the soul with divinity and awakening the conscience. So the purification of the conscience, the purification of my personality, in the sense that there's so much that's beautiful in every human soul, but then but then there's also this and this and this and this which needs sorting out. And so the purification process is the process by which God is able to uplift us and bring us back to that stage in which truly we become a reflection of the qualities of the divine. Can you imagine what happens to the world if a handful of people are able to go through this transformation? It doesn't take the whole world to change, and it's unlikely that that's going to happen. But for those who are awake and aware, those who are ready to go through this experience of transformation, they become the instruments through whom the world can change. And yes, God's vision is a vision of each one as the most elevated, pure being of goodness and nothing but goodness, but also God's vision is of a world in which there's love, harmony, peace and joy. And so all of us, as we go through our transformation and become the image of God's qualities, the reflection of God's qualities, so we create that better world together. And I don't think it's very far away. I think that many, many are going through this accelerated process. It's a process that's accelerating all the time. And so I see that this transformation is happening, and within a very short space of time, there'll be a better world. Definitely within my own lifetime. I'll be bold and say that. But maybe not even at the end of my lifetime, maybe very soon. Let's see. But God truly, love and truth and the benefactor. So I don't just want to give you a list of God's qualities. I'm sure you've been thinking about lists and you know of them, but try and experience them in the way that I've shared right at the beginning, and see for yourself. But yes, open for questions and comments now.
Well, I did say we were going to be in for a treat, didn't I? Thank you very much indeed for that, Sister Jenty. That's an awful lot for us to think about. But you're right to pause there. But is there anyone in the audience that has a question, a comment to make at this point? Yes, right at the front. So we have a roving mic. If you just hold on for it, we can capture. This event is being recorded, but you can't be seen. It really is just what's going on the stage that's being picked up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Such a blessing to attend second lecture by you. I just want to tell you that we human beings, we are so unique, so different. We come to understand God in different ways. But that's not a problem, as long as we all have God in our heart and mind. But my question is that throughout human history until now, more human beings have been killed in the name of God than any other cause. So, do you think that one day this could not happen, that people stop to be killed in the name of God?
Very topical question, thank you.
When we think about God from a very narrow perspective of religion, and I say that my understanding is the truth, then your understanding is quite different. And so, of course, it's going to be conflict, whether little conflict or big conflict, as we see happening today. But when we come to the spiritual consciousness of the self, and in that spiritual awareness we transcend the physical limits, then we know that there's only one who is the divine, and that one is the parent not just of a certain portion of humanity, but of all human beings, or of all creation. So I believe that we're moving in that direction, and we're going to come to that. What happens is that violence and conflict, of course, exaggerates everything, and so that's what gets the attention, the loud noise, the quiet spiritual revolution that is also happening at this moment, that goes unnoticed, just like the dawn comes very quietly. In the same way, the voice of spirituality comes very quietly, but it's more powerful than evil.
Thank you very much for that. Any other questions? If not, I've got one that kind of relates to that, and it's how God purifies the soul. I was particularly touched by that as you were speaking, and how powerful that would be at being able to affect change in people's minds and hearts. Would you like to just expand on that a little bit more about how does God purify our souls, my soul?
I use two images as a metaphor to explain. Think about a diamond and how if a diamond's been lying in the dust, then it gradually accumulates so much dust on it that you can't even see that it's a diamond anymore. But the jeweler, the one who's able to perceive and discern, knows its value and picks it up and with a lot of love cleans it, takes away all the dust, and the beauty of the diamond begins to shine. And in the case of the physical diamond, it's all the hard work of the jeweler. And in this case, it's an act of cooperation between soul and God. So I want to go through the process of purification, and so God is going to help me with that. And so the original qualities of the self, the diamond-like qualities of the self, again begin to emerge. God's love is able to wash away the dust, and as I follow God's principles and instructions in my life, so that beauty shines once more. The other image is a little bit similar, but also very useful. Think about how if there's gold that's been mixed with alloy, then the alloy has reduced the value of the gold. But it's possible, again, to remove all the extraneous stuff, the alloy, so that then the pure gold comes back to its original state. And so through our human experiences, different things have come in to pollute us, and so it's time to remove that alloy, and that will happen through God's love has been remembered as the fire of love, the fire of purification. It's very interesting that mystics from across the world when they've spoken of their experiences of God, not the theory of God, but their experiences of God, all the mystics have shared very similar analogies and similar experiences. The language is very much the same. And so this is the experience, the fire of love that's able to remove whatever it is that has polluted the soul.
Yes, those are very powerful images. Thank you. Thank you for that. Did that give anyone else a time to think of a question?
This one,
yeah. Yep, great, thanks.
Hello, Sister Jayanti. I wasn't sure whether to ask this because I'm not sure what I'm trying to ask, but the way the topic was going with what you just said seemed to be prompting me I should say it. So, you know, God for me sometimes feels something external out there, but it's very similar to Guru, and the concept is taking you from darkness into light. And I'm beginning to experience when I get to my higher self that I can ever imagine, actually I am God. So is that very arrogant? And what is the real source of being? Is it God? Or is it my highest self, the soul, the Guru?
There's a few questions mixed in there.
That's what I'm not sure.
In ancient teachings, India and elsewhere, there's this concept that says that there is the one energy, which is the divine energy, and we are all part of that divine energy. And if I look at the story of humanity and this story of this oneness, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I had come to the point where, because I couldn't understand this thing, because you see, on the one side, you talk about this oneness and this energy, but then the story of each one's human experience is so vastly different. And then people would say, but that's their karma. And I can't tally the story of individual human karma and one, and being part of one. Or even the fact that if there is a God, then surely God is the one who is ever pure. Do you see the paradox and the complication of this? And when I explored it, I thought, I don't want to go any further. Let me just forget about this. So I know that I moved very far away from religion and God because my questions were not being answered. And then when I came to Raj Yoga, everything fitted in. It made a lot of sense. And so I started to practice meditation. And with the understanding, God, the Supreme, the Creator, and yes, the creation reflects the qualities of the Creator, but the Creator is not in the creation. The Creator is distinct and separate, and the creation is distinct and separate. And it challenges this very traditional ancient philosophy. But it makes a lot of sense. And I spoke earlier about truth being uncomfortable, truth being challenging. And it challenges what Hinduism, for example, has said, or even modern age spiritual thinking. It challenges that too. And yes, the experience in meditation, when really you're deep in that meditation, is of oneness with God. But that's the feeling. But yoga, the very word yoga, union, it's not one separating and becoming one again, because what would be God's DNA? What would be God's personality if there's bits separating out and bits coming back in? It doesn't make any sense to me at all, I'm sorry. But yes, the oneness of feeling, just as the mother would say, you know, the child is the apple of my eye. Well, it's not an apple sitting in my eye, but it's an expression of love. And so that feeling of oneness is a beautiful feeling. And I've been there, I know it. But I also know that my connection with God is through my thoughts and my awareness, my consciousness, and through that connection with the Source, I'm able to draw what I need from the Divine to be able to come back to my own higher state of being. And I share these ideas with you, knowing that there would be many who have been thinking about this idea of all being part of the Divine. I'm totally aware of it, but I share it with you in the hope that you might want to explore it further. It's not to challenge you on what you believe and the path that you follow, but to open a door that you can perhaps explore.
Great, thank you very much. Very good question. I think we have time for one, maybe two more. Yes, thank you. Over here. Striped t-shirt.
When you keep on going on and on.
Yes, good. That's what it's the university, and we go on and on and on, right? Sometimes don't quite know when to stop because we have so much to share. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, Shanti. What I've realized throughout my life is that it's usually those who experience negative karma who are driven more, who have a greater incentive to recognize God and go within and transform. And one then gauges the inconvenience of that battle within against the battle you have with the karma, and which is going to be more comfortable. Obviously, if you're recognizing God, then that's probably a process and a journey that you could enjoy. What about those who have a positive karma and everything's going well? What is their incentive really to know God, and how do you how do you point to them to realize the importance of God?
Well, I can only share from my experience and age 18, and everything seemed to be going my way. I'm sure there's a lot of karma that I'm settling, no doubt. So I wouldn't claim that it's been nothing but positive karma, but certainly health was okay, relationships were fine, university had offered a good opportunity, and I didn't have financial problems, so everything was fine. But there was something that was motivating me, and that was I wanted to understand the direction that my life should go in, because there was so much choice. 60s and the permissive society, Western society traditional, Eastern society traditional, and I didn't know what to choose. And I couldn't just say, okay, I'm going to do this and try it out, because once you start going in a specific direction, you can't very quickly switch. So I was taking my time and just thinking, well, how am I going to find out what direction do I need to go in? And then I went to India, because a very good suggestion, connect with your roots. So after having grown up here, went back to India. And after a few months, then I felt I needed some nourishment for my intellect. And I knew the Brahma Kumaris because my mother was connected deeply. So I went to see them. And every day I was hearing things that were just amazing and opening my consciousness in a beautiful way. So curiosity, a desire to know. I think that that can be a very powerful motivation. I know it was in my life.
Were there inconveniences in that journey? Did you have to suffer? I mean, would you say there were inconveniences in that journey, in the process of knowing God? Were there internal conflicts that you had to overcome?
Not of knowing God. There were conflicts in terms of deep personality traits that you didn't even know you had, and then you discover them one by one, sometimes a few at a time together, many at a time together, and you have to then deal with it. Accept yourself, starting point, but then also accept the original higher self, the original goodness of the self, and then to work and sort it out and take God's help within that, and to acknowledge that you can't do it yourself on your own. It's with God's help that it can happen. But no conflict in terms of understanding God. But yes, for some it can be, because of the things that we've heard and people have drummed into our awareness.
Excellent, thank you very much. I said a couple because we've got, oh wow, hands are going up now. Very last one because we're eating now into meditation time, but thank you. Last question.
Firstly, we feel very privileged to come for your lecture, especially from all the way from Australia. So thank you, Margaret and Sister Jayanti, for giving us this opportunity. God's DNA, it's a very nice and beautiful thing. Also confusing as well, for me at least. What I want to ask is, once we discover and deeply involved in God's DNA, all the qualities and the way we think, the way we interact with people, would that become our DNA after some time? That's what I'd like to see happening. So I'm just wondering, would that be possible?
If I remember how God sees me, and I see myself in that way, in my highest state, and if I just keep remembering that, and my thinking process, my behavior is guided by that. We spoke about the guru within, the higher self. So yes, if I allow God's vision of me to trigger my acceptance of my own higher self, and I begin to see myself in that way, and I behave according to that, yes, then what I'm doing is allowing God's DNA to work in me and become my DNA too, so that then it's not having to make a choice, should I not, but in a very beautiful, natural, automatic way, the higher self is doing what it needs to do.
Thank you. Wonderful, thank you. And I know people are really getting warmed up now when it comes to questions, but I'm sorry, I'm going to have to draw that part of the program to a close, but thank you very much for those. But shall we join together in a traditional way and say a very warm thank you to Sister Jayanti for her wise work. Very wise, very deep as always, and now our practice through Raj Yoga to really connect with the self, that spiritual development that I talked about earlier, personal development, is via the vehicle of Raj Yoga, and we're going to have a guided meditation now for a few moments before we draw the program to a formal close. Thank you.
David, no music. I'm going to speak out my own thoughts as I meditate and invite you to follow these ideas. Sitting quietly, reflecting on the things that I've been hearing. I allow my thoughts to slow down. And watch the spaces between the thoughts. Creating space to be able to know myself. Feel the inner being, the light, the soul, the being that I am. And I realize that deep within myself, there is peace. A stillness. A sense of sacredness. And peace. And now I can feel the presence of the Divine, the Supreme, the infinitesimal point of light, the being of love, being of truth. From the ocean of love, the waves of love surround the soul. And the waves of love wash away the dust I have been carrying. And I begin to see myself as I used to be. The child of God, clean, pure, innocent. And the power of love heals the soul, removing the sorrow, soothing the wounds, and filling my heart with so much love that my heart able to be open and generous, and I can forgive and let go of the sorrow. God's love teaches me forgiveness. God's love reminds compassion. God's love empowers me. I see the divine as the source of truth. And in the presence of truth, I realize that I have to let go of so much ego and falsehood so that I may be filled with truth. Presence of the power of truth emanating from God gives me the courage to step up above and let go of all the artificial masks and all the falsehood.
Meditation. It's a wonderful atmosphere that's been created here. Thank you so much for that, and thank you also for the standing invitation to walk through the open door. You've pushed it a little bit open for us, a little wider, for us to walk through and meet that jeweler and begin to get our sparkle back. Thank you very much. I've got some notices and so forth to give, but before I do that, I've thanked our speaker, but this evening couldn't have happened without a team of people in the background, from sound to flowers to organising the rooms and the contacts I've had with various people. So thank you for all of you behind the scenes for making this evening possible. And this evening's lecture is just one in a series. There are many that happen, and there are a number that are coming up. Leaflets are at the back for you to collect. But there's one I'd like to draw your attention to, and that's next Thursday, the 16th of June. Hard to believe that we're halfway through the month already, next week. Sunday is today, and we're very fortunate to have Dr. Nirmala visiting here after a very, very long time. And if you enjoyed Sister Jyoti, you will really enjoy Dr. Nirmala. And again, it'll be another lecture that will go on and on and on, but you'll enjoy. With all the events, totally free of charge, so look forward to seeing you next week, 7 o'clock again. And if you want to see Sister Jyoti again, of course, they're both sharing a stage on Tuesday the 21st of June, and they being Dr. Nirmala and Sister Jyoti. And if you, from that experience, it was just a few minutes, would like to have an hour and a half masterclass of meditation,
then make sure you're here on the 21st. And I think it's going to be standing room only at the back if you're late, so I'd suggest that you get here nice and early, because I'm sure that's going to be a really, really popular event and a very powerful one too. So that's Tuesday the 21st. Of course it is. Thank you for reminding me. The United Nations, oh, didn't they come up with a great idea? A meditation, World Meditation Day. There's going to be lots and lots of events that are going on, actually. So, yeah, great day to take off work and start meditating right the way through all these different events and come here in the evening and finish off with some powerful 7 till 8:45 yoga. But yes, of course. Thank you for that.
When you can't smile anymore, I'll smile for you. I'll be the raindrops when you cry. I'll be the sun when you can't shine. And when the world runs out of time, I'll be there too. Too many people face.